a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Well, welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us on this, the end of the third week of the legislative session. Been an interesting week, obviously. It's been an abbreviated week. We're here for barely more than 3 days because of the weather. And it's been a week of, I guess you'd say, legislators have been somewhat distracted because of the weather. Not so much on how it's affected us, so much as how we know it's affecting, you know, people all out across South Dakota. Many of us drove back to Pierre on Tuesday, and you could see some of the after effects of the weather. And we know a lot of South Dakotans out there are hurting. I think at this point there are still 7,000 or 8,000 homes across the state, and most all in rural areas without power. Farmers and ranchers are really struggling to take care of their livestock, and we're in kind of a wait and see cycle to see what the spring is going to bring us. Because if we continue to get this kind of moisture, we're obviously going to have some serious flooding problems, mud problems. Mud is a problem if you're raising livestock, a real serious problem. And agriculture has been such a source of strength for this state through these recessionary times. And I know that's going to continue because our farmers and ranchers are survivors and they're just tough people. But they're going to be under some stress this year, and that's not going unnoticed among the legislature. Meanwhile, our life does go on here in the state capitol. We're finishing the third week, and it looks like the bill load is a little on the light side. That's a good thing because obviously we're all trying to get our hands around the budget. The Democrats, again, look forward to working with our Republican colleagues and with the governor in finding a way to responsibly balance the budget, not only for 2011, but also to really seriously look for a way to set our fiscal house in order well into the future. That's what's missing. We've talked about this before. Almost well over half of our states have sound fiscal policies that prevent the kind of structural deficits that have occurred in South Dakota. And my counterpart, Senator Scott Heideframe, and I have worked long and hard this off season on trying to develop the policies that would really really set us on a responsible course. Scott, for some years now, has advocated a 3% lid on spending. If that had been implemented 4 or 5 years ago, we simply would not have the structural deficit that we have today. We'd join our good friends in North Dakota as perhaps one of only two states without a structural deficit. Instead, here we sit with a major problem on our hands. We need both short-term and long-term solutions. Along with the 3% cap, one other thing that I've advocated, and this is something that we're still working on. I think we'll have a bill for this session yet. I've advocated another spending policy, one that would say that we will spend only 98% of ongoing revenues. This is something that a number of other states have. Rhode Island, I think, probably has the best plan. I'm trying to tailor a similar bill after Rhode Island. But Rhode Island basically says you shall not spend more than 98% of one-time revenues. The other 2% would move into a budget reserve and then into an education fund of some sort. We have the mechanisms in place to do all that. We just need the discipline of legislators to make it happen. One-time funds, which we've been using to balance the budget in previous years because we haven't had Senator Heideframe's spending cap, we've used one-time funds and plugged them right into the budget, building the base beyond what South Dakotans can afford. So those are some of the long-term policies that we're advocating. We'll continue to talk to you about those. I think we will have bills on both this session. But the short-term is a reality. We need to figure out what to do immediately this session. And we'll talk a little bit about that this morning, and then we'll open it up to questions. Senator Heideframe will talk about some of our short-term ideas.
Well, thank you, Bernie. Bernie mentioned the 3% spending cap, and that's been something that's been really important to me and to our caucus for a number of years. I was raised to not say I told you so, and so I'm not going to make that a major theme of our morning, but the fact is, on a going forward basis, we need to make this change so that we don't find ourselves in a structural deficit situation. And again, a structural deficit is simply when you take in less money than you spend on an ongoing basis, and that's what we've been doing in state government for 7 of the last 8 years. One of the biggest expenses in state government, of course, is for employees. And that's been a major focus of where we think we can make substantial savings in South Dakota. One of the things that we've talked about is the growth in the number of state employees in South Dakota during this administration. That number has gone up from 12,900 roughly to 14,400, or growth of 1,500 state employees. Even the governor's office agrees that the numbers are generally in that category. I think they had a number of 1,400 and some, and that was reduced to 1,320 growth after 104 of the positions the governor has now decided to eliminate are taken into consideration. But basically, that's the growth of an employee every 48 hours during the entire time of the Rounds-Dugard administration, at a time when the state of South Dakota's population has remained about the same. We think that kind of growth just can't be sustained and needs to be rolled back. And we've given a plan of how we're going to do that. We're going to use attrition. We're going to use the consolidation of positions. We're going to take out empty FTEs, and we're going to return the state to 12,900 state-funded employees, just as we had it 7 years ago when the Rounds-Dugard administration started. And we believe we can do that without reducing essential services. A year ago, when we found ourselves as a state in the kind of fiscal crisis that other states found themselves in, the governor instituted a hiring freeze. And when he did that, he said that we were going to now only hire essential employees. To which we answered, why on earth would we ever hire anything but essential employees in the state of South Dakota? We simply don't have the kind of money to do hiring beyond what is absolutely essential in the state. That should have been the policy going forward. But what I remember, we had a chart at a news conference just like this that we showed. It was simply a blow-up of a page from one of our publications that showed all the different ways that states had responded to the fiscal crisis they found themselves in. South Dakota was missing from that chart. And in fact, we did nothing other than the mentioned hiring freeze to really brace ourselves for what has been a sustained economic decline. But I want everyone to be careful. When the explanation is given that we find ourselves in this difficult time because of the economic decline of the last 12 or 18 months, remember that we've had a structural deficit not for 12 or 18 months, but for 7 of the last 8 years. In other words, we haven't had a cushion for this kind of a blow economically, and so it's a kind of a double whammy, a sustained period of structural deficits coupled with an economic downturn, and we find ourselves in a position of having to take the measures that we've outlined. You know, but honestly, I think many of these steps should be taken anyway, just as a matter of good governing, just as a matter of sound fiscal governing. And so we provided a list to you of some of the short-term fixes in addition to the FTEs. One more word about that, though. The governor has said, and he said in his message, he would find 102 positions to be eliminated in South Dakota in terms of state government. Remember a year ago at meetings just like this when we talked about this very problem and we were told by state government that there weren't any positions that they could sacrifice, that they just couldn't reduce the size of state government, and in fact they didn't. In fact, they passed a budget, not with our help, but they passed a budget that kept the number of FTEs and actually swelled the size of state government beyond where it was when we got here a year ago. Now, finally, the governor has got the message, and the message is we need to reduce the size of the bureaucracy. He's taken a first step, but it's a very small and inadequate step. It's 102 positions against growth of 1,500. We need to do a better job than that. The governor has also projected that those 102 positions would only save the state about $2 million. That is if you use a figure, and I talked to a previous chair of the Appropriations Committee just this morning, that's assuming a cost per employee of $20,000. We all know that the costs for employees in state government exceed that. I don't know what the average is. I think it's in the high 30s. That's not take-home pay. That's the cost to the taxpayers of a position. But if you use that figure, then even 102 positions should save you closer to $4 million than $2 million. We believe that we can find a number greater than 102 without imperiling the services that the people of South Dakota want and need from their state government. What is that magic number? Well, we know that in terms of empty FTEs, that is, positions for which we appropriate taxpayers' dollars but are not filled, the number is closer to 600. And in fact, what I saw and what we distributed shows that it's more than 600. Some of those positions will occur naturally in state government. For instance, if someone is in the Department of Personnel and they leave that position, and the head of the Department of Personnel, it takes them 3 months to fill that position, that would appear as 3/12 of an empty FTE. So we need to take that into consideration. But other than that, for positions that are truly empty, and as we learned from appropriations, have been empty for a number of years, we simply need to reduce those numbers of empty FTEs so the taxpayers know that when the Appropriations Committee appropriates dollars for a position, the position is filled and the service is performed. We've also provided you with a list of other short-term cuts. Now, there isn't any magic to this list, as far as we are concerned, these are all possibilities that we are laying out there for the citizens and the taxpayers of South Dakota to consider, from excess airplanes to Washington, D.C. lobbyists to empty FTE positions to savings that can be achieved in terms of the location of the prison in Rapid City. That's estimated to be $1 million, to the issue that's arisen about license plates, which is projected, I think, to be another $1 million. To all the other things that we've discussed. These are concrete items. And before we open it up for questions, I would only suggest to you that our friends across the aisle had a press conference on the steps of the Grand Staircase here in the Capitol Building, and what they said is we are going to find $32 million in cuts. We're still waiting for that list. You have ours. We'd be glad to open it up for questions.
What is the source of this list of FTEs, for expand FTEs, and where did you get this?
I believe it was, David, I think it was an Appropriations Committee document. Do you have it in front of you? That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says personnel services budgeted versus actual at the top.
Right, so this is from the Appropriations Committee?
I believe it is.
It is. That's definitely Appropriations.
That's right.
Okay.
The thing that's interesting to me about it, and probably caught your eye as well, is at the top, the difference between budgeted and actual FTEs is 624. And then as you go down in the first group of columns, you see the amount of money that is actually budgeted and then the actual amount spent. Now, that to me is savings that could be achieved today, this year, in the state of South Dakota.
Do you know what you said you mentioned about that some of these empty FTEs do get filled? It's just someone being gotten 3/12 of a year or whatever. Do you have any idea what percentage of these empty FTEs are due to turnover and what are just never filled?
I don't. Okay. I don't know the exact number, but I think we need to move in the direction of 600 rather than 100. And let's find out what actually happens with services in the state of South Dakota. I don't even know that we've made a meaningful attempt to combine positions or to identify where we could combine positions. You know, one of the things that we propose, and it's on our list here, is zero-based budgeting. And that's really worth thinking about. In 1978, the South Dakota legislature adopted zero-based budgeting. Basically, what that means is every bureau and agency in state government comes before a committee of the legislature and justifies every penny of taxpayer dollars that are being used. Every penny. We don't take last year's budget and have some unspoken assumption that it was the right number and we're just going to build on that or we're going to affect that at the margin one way or the other. Zero-based budgeting requires everyone in state government to come before a committee and say, this is why the service we provide in this bureau or agency is essential. But zero-based budgeting has never really been attempted in South Dakota. We believe that if we did that honestly and sincerely, what we'd find is that there's an awful lot of state government we can live without that is not delivering essential services to the people of South Dakota. However, we will not know that until we have the chance to really attempt zero-based budgeting. We do something that is sort of a cousin of zero-based budgeting, and that is that each year we have two or three departments that are reviewed, I believe by interim appropriations or by special committees appointed by the Legislative Research Council's executive board. But that really isn't zero-based budgeting. What we want to do is take the bureaucracy down to its skeleton and then build it back up again for essential services. And that just hasn't been done.
You said the legislature adopted that in 1978?
It's on the books. The problem is it says may instead of shall. And so it's really up to the executive department to actually say to the legislature, let's do zero-based budgeting, let's plan for it. It will take, there will be some cost involved because it is an exhaustive procedure when it's been done in other states.
Are you going to propose a bill to change that from May to shall?
Well, we haven't yet. I did recommend it, I think, a year or two ago. There's still time to do that. We could. I'd like to know, I guess, that there is some sentiment on the other side for that kind of a change in our budgeting process.
So just looking over the sheet of the FTEs, I see that a big part of the money from the budget that did not use FTEs was transferred to other funds, which seemed to imply that the money is just not lying out there to take, but that it's being used for other things. So proposing cuts in other areas, is that correct? As opposed to just a pool, it's just dead weight, you can just cut and instantly reduce the deficit.
Right. Those are all really good questions, and they're questions that we need answers for from the appropriators and from the executive branch. I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to find out, and why we also need zero-based budgeting, because with all the transfers, it becomes a maze of money that we just can't get our hands around. Why we need some strong fiscal policies in place so that the legislature, which is, as Senator Heidefreem has really articulated well on a number of occasions, the legislature is a citizen legislature, and that is a wonderful thing, but by statute and by constitution and by practice in South Dakota, it's weaker than it should be. And we need to find some ways to strengthen it. Senator Heidefreem has spoken about this and has some really concrete ideas on how to do it. Zero-based budgeting would be one way to do that. We don't have the answers to those kind of questions because we don't have the staff or the time out here to really delve into it that deeply.
But let me give you a specific, David, because we learned this from the Appropriations Committee just the other day. I happened to be sitting in there the first week of session. The executive branch has extraordinary powers to transfer dollars, not only within a department, but between departments. Now, the transfer between departments requires the approval of the Interim Appropriations Committee. The transfer within departments, it's my understanding of the law, is just done by the Bureau of Finance and Management, and the transfer, the reason for the transfer, whatever, is logged and available to be inspected. That's my understanding. But here's how it works. Pick a department, just make one up, and that department comes before appropriations and says, we need 38 people to carry out this essential function of state government. The appropriators listen to them and they say, I believe you do. Here is the appropriation for 38 people. And by the end of the year, what happens is they only fill 35 of those positions. Three positions are unfilled, and yet the dollars have been appropriated. So they transfer those dollars within the department for something else. All I mean to suggest is that the taxpayers in South Dakota expect honesty in the budgeting process. Is it too much to expect of our department heads to look accurately down the road 12 months and inform the appropriators, this is what we're going to need for travel, for personnel, for all these other departments? Why is it necessary that there be that kind of a cushion in the budgeting process so that they can move funds around? All I'm suggesting is, as the appropriators, they need to know exactly what the plans are for that 12-month period. In the absence of that, what you really have is an appropriations process that merely makes suggestions to the executive branch.
It's not just a problem with empty FTEs. It's also a problem with all other fund balances throughout state government. We have not dozens, we have hundreds of funds, even special checking accounts. I don't like the word slush fund because that insinuates that something criminal or really, really underhanded is going on. I think the monies are usually spent on relatively worthy projects. People have good ideas and they want to serve the public, and they've got a dozen different ways to do it, a dozen different ways to spend the money. So we're not don't like to use those kind of words, but truly, I mean, the legislature does not have a good grip on what's going on. We're not able to set the priorities because they're spending the money before it ever comes back to us for us to see it. And we need to get back to a situation where the legislature has some control over the appropriation process over the state budget. That simply doesn't happen today. You've all been here on the last day of the legislative session when the appropriations bill finally comes, and we're told that, you know, wait, you've got spending ideas on programs or services or efficiencies, wait, the appropriations bill's coming, right? And you wait, and you wait, and you wait, and you even wait on that last day sometimes, and it finally it comes down, and it's just a big thing of numbers like this. It's all numbers. And legislators, even those who've been on appropriations, can hardly read it. It's almost Latin. So somehow we need to restore some accountabilities, some responsibility to the process, and I think that's really what all our policies speak to.
We really believe that there is a general sense in the public that government is too big, that government needs to be smaller, smarter, more transparent, and more accountable. And the great debate that's going to go on the rest of this session and the rest of this year is which party is better able to take this bureaucracy down to the level that is essential to provide services, to actually reduce the size of government. Is it the party that built that government to its current size in the first place? Or is it the party that resisted building it and owes it no debt?
Just to clarify something I think you said in past conferences here, the 3% cap, I think we're probably saying something about K-12 education not falling under that limit you're proposing.
My idea is that it would not be included. In fact, David, I just reviewed the draft of the bill and dropped it off in the hopper this morning, and I did not check to see if it does exclude K-12, but if it does not, it's my intention to add that.
How are you feeling about freezing the mill levies? I know the Bureau of Finance and Management is putting in a bill in the House right now.
Well, we're opposed to it. It would result in a property tax increase for anybody who had any kind of a valuation increase. And admittedly, it would not be a lot statewide if you spread it out statewide. But it's a property tax increase, and I think you've got to be sensitive to any kind of tax increase in these recessionary times. You know, the whole idea is our revenues are down because people can't afford to pay their taxes. So the idea that the solution is to increase their taxes even more, I mean, just seems backwards to Scott and I. So, and also, I think you have to worry about the danger of kind of sowing the seeds, I would say, of a new property tax revolt. We're fairly fortunate right now. I think farmers and ranchers have been doing okay. I think we've got homeowner property taxes somewhat under control right now. The last thing we need right now is to go back to the 1990s when we had just people just chomping at the bit to knock down property taxes. That would really be crippling to local government. So we need to be sensitive to the property tax payers. We're kind of fortunate in South Dakota, as I review all these tax policies that other states have. You know, we've really been fortunate. I think the citizens of South Dakota have been very patient over the past decades. They have not put on the ballot some of the crazy things that other states have done to limit what we do here. I'm sure some feel like it at times, but they've resisted it, or the voters have resisted it when they have it put on the ballot. So we don't have some of the tax limitations that other states have, some of the crazy ones. We also don't have any of the responsible ones they have. What Scott and I are suggesting is that somehow we put in statute, and maybe eventually in the Constitution, some responsible kinds of spending limits that'll keep the voters from rising up, and revolting. I'm afraid the governor's proposal to raise property taxes would ignite those kind of revolts.
What do you mean in this proposal when you say targeted across the board cuts? As a matter of fact, targeted cuts and across the board cuts are sort of opposite. When you say you want targeted across the board cuts, what does that mean?
Well, to me, it might mean different things to different people, but I think you need to probably, with so many people out of work, Medicaid rolls really, really swelling. I think you probably need to try to stay away from the Medicaid rolls where federal match monies are involved. I think you need to stay away from K-12 education. They're already so badly underfunded that you need to make an exception there.
So K-12 across the board cuts or something?
Largely staying away from K-12 and Medicaid funding.
For these across the board cuts, do you think it's better to leave this, the decision of the area where to cut, to department heads, or do you think lawmakers should go to each department and make those decisions of where to cut the, them in each department themselves?
That's a very good question, and I would only say that in our past experience, it's been, I'm trying to remember, I think it was in 1981, Governor Jankel said to then Chief of Staff Ron Williamson, go to the various department heads, and then I think it was a 5% cut, and tell them to reduce. They have 95% of what they had last year, but they have to deliver the same level of services. Now, you guys who work in that department and understand that department, you tell me how to do it. It seems to me that trusting those folks to do that, giving them the instruction, but trusting them to do it is probably the best route. That is to say, I don't know every nook and cranny of state government, but the governor puts people in place in those positions to do that, and they need to be trusted to do exactly that. And I think they'd be the ones who would best be able to make the cuts.
Although I think we've come up with a fairly sizable and very responsible list of cuts that well over $30 million. So we've gone well along the way of providing, you know, program cuts, very specific cuts, that'll probably result in the idea that you won't have to do an across-the-board cut of any great size if we can find broad support for our ideas, or if our Republican colleagues have some ideas of their own. You know, hopefully we'll have enough program cuts, very specific cuts, that the across-the-board cut will be fairly minimal.
Governor has argued that as you're calling the big chunk of your cuts comes from repealing the corporate tax breaks. Governor's argued those tax breaks encourage economic development.
Does anybody really believe that TransCanada was not going to come under South Dakota on their way from Calgary down to wherever they were going? They were going to take the most efficient route between A and B. This isn't this didn't serve to incentivize the process of bringing TransCanada to South Dakota, but we're paying them. I mean, Jim Hunstad said it best. Senator Hunstad from Bass said it best. Does anyone think a bill would have passed if we'd introduced a special appropriation for X number of millions of dollars to hand to TransCanada to burrow under our state's farm ground? No one would have voted for it. But that's the practical effect of the contractor's excise tax rebate. And we think it's time that we reconsider that for a narrow period of 2 years. That's what we're talking about, a two-year period in which those rebates would not be paid back to those individuals. We have been assured that that will not affect anyone in wind development, in ethanol development, in any biofuel development, but will in fact save the taxpayers of South Dakota up to $20 million a year. I can't imagine why we wouldn't do that.
You've been assured by who? You didn't even assure that won't affect renewable.
Well, in the first instance, by Senator Hunstad, who's actually done the research on the bill, and I mean, I think that's probably accurate, but I'm sure open to correction if it's not.
And if it's not, we'll be hearing from those special interests, I promise you. And it may. We're throwing it out there. The Revenue Department would really, I give the Revenue Department credit. They took the lead on this. They alerted us to this last session, at least in House Taxation Committee. They talked about this to some degree. So, I mean, this really grew out of the Revenue Department staffers who just felt it was a giveaway program that had grown beyond the state's ability to pay it. And you know, they're constantly, I mean, their Revenue Department staffers are assigned to go out and reclassify the ads to look for grandmas that are selling quilts and selling them like classifieds to look for sales tax on those kind of dollars. So they're sensitive to the idea that we need to maintain state revenues. And while they were reading the classifieds, they got the right idea that maybe they should alert legislators to this giveaway program, which would be a lot of grandma's quilts. Well, thank you very much for this opportunity. We're always available to answer questions. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.